two new running backs for the Chicago Bears, Kathy and Judy.
We're suiting them up. Could be any worse.
They've done worse. So
yeah.
Hello, ladies. How are you?
Oh, we're good. Thank you, Lou.
And what do you got coming up today?
Well, we want to talk about when you've been very socially uncomfortable, when you've been in a situation where somebody, like a couple with you, is having a fight in front of you.
Ooh, and you're in the middle of it?
Yeah.
And you're like, ooh.
Right. Or when the bill comes and somebody makes a big deal about a 52-cent difference. You know, I thought this was only $1.22 and you have it as $1.70.
Oh, better than if you're with your husband and he's the one doing it.
Oh, no. Oh.
That doesn't happen to me. I'm just saying
that would be worse.
That
could make you socially uncomfortable.
Well, it does. I used to have to apologize for one of my husbands all the time.
Let me guess what his name was.
I like the comment. One of my husbands. I have to for one of my husbands. That's good.
Right. A previous husband. So anyway, that's one of the things. And I'd also like to talk about the names that families come up with to avoid using the real names of body parts or functions.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
We are going to talk about that.
Well, it's one of mine. What's one of yours?
Whether or not you talk to a doctor who's younger than you and call him Bob or Dr. Farquhart.
I call it Mr. Hooper.
We'll just talk about that when we have a radio show. We don't want to be late for Steve.
No,
do we
certainly don't. Have a good one.
Do you mean Mr. Hooper?
Mr. Hooper. Have a good one.
Ciao, Bella.
Oh, good time, good sound, huh?
It was a wonderful time, yeah.
Just a great group
of WGN listeners. And
well, and you had Sharon with you, which is
Sharon
nice.
Sharon was with me, yeah.
Did you feel you looked American, Steve?
Did I feel I looked American?
Uh-huh.
You know what? One day in Venice, I went out and I had a red Nike like polo shirt on.
Uh-huh.
And like, no one else is wearing a color. I mean, every guy is
black and gray.
Right. So I did go back in and change. But, you know, because we were just hanging out in the hotel. So, I mean, I was back in and out of the hotel the whole day. But a little bit,
You were in Venice and you hung out in the hotel the whole day?
It was a great hotel. We stay in very nice hotels.
Wow.
No, but I've decided that group tours, like these bus tours, they're like minivans. Because I was, you know, people think, oh, I'm too cool for this. I would never want to do this. And then you get one. It's like, this is okay. You know,
because somebody else is driving.
They're making all the decisions.
Are there bathrooms on those things?
There are. Yes, there are. Yeah.
I'm in.
Now, did you notice the group dynamic of were there any people that were?
There's always one.
There's always a couple.
There's always
yeah.
one.
There's always
in any group.
One given couple or a couple of individuals who.
Well, it's like I really enjoy this because it's like a petri dish. You know, it's 30 or 40 people and they're, you know, contained. And so everyone's characteristics are sort of amplified for 8 or 10 days.
They become more of who they really are.
Yeah. And so, but it's also like, you know, that it's only going to be 8 or 10 days. So everyone's more accepting, I think, of people too.
So did I ever tell you that I was ousted in?
No.
You were the one?
I had to sit alone on the bus. Nobody would sit with me.
Because?
You just said you become more of who you are.
When was this, Jude?
In the 80s, I went to Israel with the American Defamation League, and they'd picked all these women.
Wait, this is a group that defamed America?
Anti-defamation.
Oh, okay.
Defamation
League.
We're all for defamation.
I was president of the board.
Sign me up, right?
No wonder that you sat alone.
So what did you find out that you had done that was so offensive? Did you defame people?
No, I think I just didn't fit in. I can't explain it. I didn't feel like I wanted to be accepted by them because it was embarrassing to sit alone. But
did you sit alone because nobody came to sit next to you?
Yeah.
Not because somebody said, Judy, you have to go sit in the back. You're too annoying.
It wasn't kindergarten. It wasn't a timeout.
But it happened day after day where you were the one alone.
It built.
Right.
And
then
I felt on the last night. On the last night, there was a certain amount of acceptance. And then years later, one of the women had a talk show for a while. And she called up to GN
You know Queen Latifah?
No, Dr. Laura.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, it was a humbling experience. And well, I just wondered if anybody was,
No, there were no, because there are no fists. But let me tell you the other side of it. One of the women, Carol Paulini is her name, and she was staying on to go to Assisi and to go to back to
another place.
Another place.
Yeah.
And so we had to leave to catch our flight very early in the morning. Like, we had to catch a boat in Venice at 4:30 in the morning. It was awful. So it's the one bad thing I'll change. Carol got to sleep in because she was going to stay and take a train later in the next day.
Mm-hmm.
She got up to wish us all off.
Oh.
Well, that was nice.
Isn't that sweet?
Yeah.
Are you going to have a reunion next week?
Not next week.
Just with Carol.
Just with Carol
right.
when she comes back. But yeah, so it just was, we just had, it was a good trip. I mean, the Ireland trip was fantastic, too. I love doing it.
What's
so.
Your next one?
I don't know. Where do you want to go?
I don't
trying
know.
To get people, you know, Italy is, Judy Pilek is doing a trip in May to Italy.
I know.
And that's a great one, too, because that's Rome and then the Amalfi Coast. And people can I get a little plug?
Sure.
Should I just do it?
Just did.
Yeah, call me. I'll set you up with that. It's 847-606-6065 or on the web at wgnradio.com/events.
And all right.
Go to the Amalfi Coast.
Steve, I have kind of a fashion question that just came up.
Well, he's just been to Italy, so he'll know what
perhaps.
To do.
I bought
perhaps.
A man bag. I bought a nice man
did
bag.
Did you buy a man bag?
I did, yeah.
Oh, yes. Will you show it to us?
I didn't bring it in today. I would have. I was thinking about whether to bring it in. I thought I've got new use for it, but I should have shown it to you.
Well, we want a picture.
Okay.
Here's the fashion question. We were sitting here talking to Lou, and I noticed a man and a woman, young people, walking down the street, and I am not usually, my eyes immediately went to his package area. And
you don't notice that you do that all the time?
I check it out sometimes.
Yeah, okay. People say that about
and
you.
I just thought, well, wait a minute. What? It's not like it's that remarkable or anything. But then I realized it's because the zipper on his jeans went almost down underneath into the inseam area.
You mean
usually
like
zipper stops a little
backwards
bit.
Backwards J.
Yes, the zipper was a very long zipper.
We call that the fish hook.
That's what you made that up, but that's what it looked like. That's what it looked like. And so I've been noticing as people are walking by that's not common, because I thought maybe I'm making this up. But generally with guys, their zippers don't go all the way down into the lower package area.
What was the guy he was wearing jeans then?
He was just wearing jeans,
yeah.
But the stitching on the jeans was, and I just wondered if that was a new fashion thing for guys.
I've never seen that before.
That sounds like True Religion jeans.
Well,
I'll say the world.
I got religion.
Let's hear from yeah.
What's True Religion jeans?
Yeah,
it's a very high-priced jean. They've been around for a few years now.
And it's a
10,
long zipper?
Say. Yeah, and the stitching is very prominent on the
yes.
jeans, so that
yes,
sounds like True Religion. Yeah, and they also have like horse bit pocket detail on the back of the pockets.
I didn't notice the back of him. I was just noticing the front of him.
Yeah, very high price. They're like $269 a pair.
Well, if you're looking to get somebody to check out your package, I guess that's the price you pay. But I just thought that was weird. And in the same vein,
Beyonce, I'm so interested that you know that.
You know how sometimes you're sitting and you're on the internet and you say, how did I wind up here?
Okay. Where were you?
I was on, I think that I had started with the Duggars, because as you know, I'm obsessed with the Duggars.
So you were already low down.
I was
already in
the weird place.
Are they still doing stuff?
No,
really,
please.
Are they? No, really, are they?
Sure, they're two of them. They just married off two daughters.
Okay.
You know, did the whole weird no kissing or touching till you're married thing. But anyway, I wound up on a page that was promoting, and it was a Christian thing, promoting that women should never wear pants. Women always have to wear long skirts. And the whole logic behind it was that if women are wearing pants, that men's eyes are immediately drawn to the crotch.
To the crotch area.
Well, as I just proved, then maybe men should start wearing skirts, because I think women check that out, too.
I never... ever.
You never? Mm-mm. Really?
Walk away from me, though.
No wonder you're sitting alone on a bus.
And that was one of the first things I noticed about the person to whom I'm married.
Was his name Tom this time?
From the front or the back?
The back.
You just thought, well, that's cute.
Well, that's nice.
Mm. Yeah. And if you're looking at the front,
as
you don't want
to
be saying that's cute.
When guys get older and older and older,
oh, it disappears.
Flattens out.
Right?
There's just like, no. Can you say ass? I think you just did. Oh.
Our number is 312-981-7200. You are welcome to text us or to call us at that number. And we'll see if you do right after this. What's that, funky dance music?
Okay, so we looked up.
We did go to True Religion.
And Beyonce's right.
Yeah, about that their jeans seem to have a longer zipper, which on guys' jeans, which kind
leaving
of draws
room for
attention.
Guys who don't wear pants.
Yes,
to
one
explain
of the
where
right.
they are
on the coated men's runner. It's yes. very clear that the model is going
coded,
commando.
Coded.
Coated men's runner. That's just the one that I looked up.
Oh, but speaking of coatings,
he looks very John Hamm. Please go ahead.
Excuse me. There's no face on that. That's just the crotch
they're
showing. Well, how do you know he looks like John Hamm? Oh, my God. You do it on TV, too.
Just look up John Hamm on the internet. Oh.
It doesn't show his face?
Abundantly gifted. And often without underwear. Okay, please, okay. Judy, go to another topic.
Okay, well, I'm moving up the body.
Okay.
To and involving the word coatings.
Yes.
And yesterday, I had been given for my 70th birthday, which was nearly a year ago, I'd been given a half spa day package by my brother and his husband. And so I went and took advantage of it yesterday, and so I had a hot stone massage for 80 minutes, but then I decided, well, I'll get a facial, because I can't remember the last time I've ever had a facial. I think I've only had about 3 of them in my whole life. So, of course, the first thing they go like, "What?" They didn't say it like, when is the last time you had a facial? But so I said, oh, it's been ages.
Which could mean weeks or decades, right.
Right. But I think this facial stuff, it's just a lot of slathering.
I agree.
It's just like you get your face massaged with these, oh, this is the moisturizing
right.
mask.
And
but
this is the cucumber extractor.
And the pumpkin and the hydrating.
Yes.
Oh, don't forget, I just had the moisturizing one, but I'm getting the hydrating
right.
one now.
Mm-hmm.
And then she puts this thing on my face that's kind of like a, you know what those fish are like that are like circular and they're round and they're just like flappy?
Like a skate. Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting here in the studio
with, your
with
arms
my arms
flapping,
out.
Right.
Yeah, flapping like a skate. And so it was collagen. And I said, you know, I think I've read somewhere that the skin can't absorb collagen because it comes in, its molecules are too big. This is the closest to physics I've ever got.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember reading about or being told about the molecules or reading about them or something. And she said, well, that's true. It's not going to be like injections, but you will see a difference in your face when this comes off in 15 minutes.
Because it will be off.
I didn't say anything. I really didn't.
How long ago did you get this facial?
Yesterday.
I break out the next day. I don't have pimples, but if I have a facial the next day, I look like it's the day before my prom.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I always break out after a facial.
But, you know, there are a lot of people in Europe who get this done every month.
Hmm.
And it just seems like
it was given to you as a gift.
Oh,
and it's certainly a luxury for the majority of people. The cost of a facial is probably $50 or $60 minimum, maybe more.
Well, this was at Elizabeth Arden.
Right,
so
okay, then
imagine.
$150. So I'm sure that for most people, the decision, children eat, I get a facial, children eat wins.
Well, wait, it's a luxury for everyone, right? I mean, there's no there's no function to a facial, right?
Right.
No, but the, but it's supposed to be the way to have a beautiful complexion by having it every month.
Okay, but have you ever looked at someone and said, oh, that person just had a facial?
Facial, no.
Okay. Well, I'm telling you, 11 seconds after I got out of there, you wouldn't have thought that either.
Well, I'll tell you what, though. I often will look at a woman of color and think, oh, well, she's 42, and it turns out that she's 70. And women of color seem to have just much more beautiful
skin. Right.
Than those of us who are really pale.
Who are zit pitted.
Yeah, and all wrinkled up and everything else. And
well, so what are you saying? So you're saying that you don't know?
Like my friend Joanne. Joanne's not African-American, but she's Italian. And I think women who tend to have darker skin just age better.
Oh, they do.
Yeah.
Haven't you seen all those wrinkly redheads walking
around? I know. Those Irish old broads. But just a reminder, and we're going to remind you of this a couple times during today's show. Next week, we get bumped again by Northwestern football. And the last time that happened, we didn't get a whole lot of time to warn you because it happened at 10:30 when we went to the stream. And I think for a lot of you, the concept is that it's a big damn deal. It's not. You go to your computer, and we're assuming that many of you, the majority of you, have a computer or a tablet or something.
If not, you've got a week.
That's right. Go to WGNradio.com. Or you can go to your smartphone.
As much as you to walk around
get
with
the
your
WG,
phone.
Right. Get the WGN app on your smartphone. And there's a couple different places there to listen to WGN when you go to the app. And you just click on is it the set? WGN2 or the stream? Or?
Yeah, I think on WGNradio.com, it's WGN Plus.
Okay.
But it'll say, like, at the top of WGNradio.com, click here to listen to Kathy and Judy.
Right. So next week, be ready. We're going to be on WGN AM for half an hour, and then we're flipping over to the stream. And as always, we like to remind you that even if you're not listening on your radio and you can hear us talking to one another, you can join in on the conversation.
Right.
Does you weren't here out? That week, Steve.
I was, too.
Oh,
were
was.
You?
Yeah. Okay. Beyonce was working. We're all down
here. It was so much
here.
Fun watching the two of you.
We had a 90. We had a 90-minute four-way conversation.
Yeah, because nobody would call up.
And then when we complained, you said, I'm listening. I'm just not calling. Right. Well, this is a listener-driven show. We're, except for this first half hour, which we just didn't
No, it's still listener-driven, but no listeners were calling.
Well, I don't think we gave them
anyway, next
like
week.
Next
week.
Just get ready. Just be prepared. In fact, you can even start.
Practice.
Practice.
You I could. Bet there's something on the stream right now. Or maybe not.
No, I don't think. Is there something on the stream right now?
Well, you guys are on the online right
we're
now.
We're on the regular line.
Right.
Right. Anyway, here's our number. Write it down. 312-981-7200. Like that. Makes
perky.
Me feel like I'm in a club. In a granny
this is
club.
About how
in the early 80s.
Right. And Donna Summers over there somewhere in the corner getting ready to perform. Anyway.
Right. That's the club you'd be at.
We asked about if you have can recall a moment that in which you found yourself supremely socially uncomfortable. And if you can think of one or one comes to mind, give us a call at 312-981-7200. You're at dinner with another couple and they start fighting with each other or start sniping at each other or often has to do with the bill.
We have a set of friends like that. And every time we're with them, you know,
you just
Tom gives them a grade as to whether they're behaving or not.
Oh,
but it's
to them
the
or
wife.
To you
no, no,
after
no,
the event?
To me.
Right.
Because every time we come home, he says, I can't do that anymore.
Right.
You know, she's just so rough on him.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are those times and when it comes up, what do you do with it?
Well,
what
prompted this?
Well, this is not hugely socially uncomfortable, but this is kind of a difference between big town, small town. Here, if I have a meal with somebody, there's almost 100% of the time they bring a check. And most of the time, people just throw down two cards and just right. figure you split the check. And where I live now, it's always separate checks. Always. 95% of the time, separate checks. Even though in many cases, the checks are, we both have the chicken sandwich and lemonade or whatever. Oh. But most people, and I'm guessing it's a big town, small town thing, but there have been a couple times when the server will say separate checks, and I'll go, no, one's fine. And at the same time that the other person is saying, yes, separate checks. So that's always a little moment where you go, ooh, sorry. I was a little socially uncomfortable with that.
We had one years ago when I was married to Tom Markey, and this couple got in the car. We'd met them in Lamaze class. We really liked them. Mm-hmm. We started dating and bringing our babies, and then finally we were at a juncture where we said, let's get babysitters and we'll go down to Greek Town. And they come out to the car because we're picking them up, and her eyes are all like blurry red, no makeup on, because she's been crying and crying and crying. And she says, we're getting divorced. We just decided.
Oh.
Where'd you go for dinner?
Greek Town. And Opa. Got hammered. We really did. And we were all really mean to the husband.
Hmm.
Wait, so the four of you still went out for dinner?
We'd paid for the babysitters.
Wow. So wait, okay, I want to picture this. So you pull up, the woman gets in the car uh-huh. crying. Was the husband with her at the time?
Uh-huh.
And she says, we're getting
she
a divorce?
She wasn't full crying.
She had been crying.
Right.
Right.
And she said, we're getting a divorce.
We just decided we're getting divorced. And then it turned out he had fallen for someone else.
The Lamaze teacher. Not so much.
It was the bank teller.
Oh, okay.
But so when that happened, we were really mad at him because we had just gotten these new friends that we liked, and we were all going to be interested in each
right.
other's babies. And they
he
got
wrecked
divorced.
It.
But that evening, you know, thank God for, what is the Greek
one? Ouzo?
Yeah, whatever that, no, the red one, Retsina. We drank ourselves into a
Silly.
Place of...
The four of you.
Of not goodness.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And did you talk about it at dinner?
Oh yeah. A little bit.
And this was a couple you were just starting to date, really.
Right. Whoa. Right. But they just made the decision, like, it felt like 20 minutes before they got in our car.
See, I'd have gotten the drive-thru Euro and gone home.
Our number's
such a wild and crazy guy.
312-981-7200. Uncomfortable social moments. This is Janet.
Hello.
Hello, hi. Janet.
Well, I want to tell you about a trip that I made years ago with a schedule to go with my sister-in-law, and she had to back out at the last moment. So I got to Italy to our hotel. And they had the usual welcoming meeting for everybody. And everybody introduced themselves and told them where they were from, et cetera, et cetera. And that was fine. But during the course of the trip, I sat by myself. No one ever said, if we stopped for lunch, come and sit with us. They knew I was
just
alone. I don't know whether they thought I was trying to steal their husband or what.
Huh.
Well, now, did
and
you
Judy
hear me
can
talk
relay.
Earlier about that when I was on a trip to Israel and I was sitting alone on the bus all the time?
Yes, and that's what brought it to mind.
Yeah,
well,
that's
certainly socially uncomfortable.
Exactly.
The whole trip.
Oh,
Janet, yeah, I'm not sure what's going on with your phone, but you're breaking up there. This is Rhonda. Hey, Rhonda.
Hi.
When did you become very socially uncomfortable?
You know what?
What?
I hope my daughter's listening, but she's not listening. But she decided when she was in college to stop shaving her armpits. And we were at a very nice restaurant. My husband's laughing. We were at a very nice restaurant. It was summer. She was home. And I didn't want her to go in. She was wearing a topless, maybe a halter or something. And I didn't want her to go into this restaurant. We were meeting some friends. And I said, can you bring a sweater? Can you put a sweater? And she got all, you know, like her feelings hurt.
Hmm.
So I thought, you know.
Had it grown really long?
Yeah.
She was like all furry under her pits.
Yes. She scratched her head a lot.
Did she?
So.
No. What was she doing?
But, you know, she went through that phase where she didn't want to buy clothes in a regular store. She wanted to buy, you know, used
resale
clothes.
Resale, right.
Yes, yes.
Did she also stop shaving her legs?
Yes.
Well, she was just one furry little girl, wasn't she?
Now, what happened? Is she back? Is she a shaver now?
Oh, my God. If you should see her now. She's beautiful. She's model beautiful. She just went, you know, 360 degrees the other way. And, oh, yes. And so, you know,
well, I mean,
it's all wonderful now.
It's not that uncommon in other countries.
Well, I was
it's
just going to say,
common.
I dated a non-shaver for a while, and she was very proud of her blonde hair.
Did the draperies match the curtain?
On her legs.
Oh, okay.
And I took her home to the family thing once. You know, I'm like, oh, come on, please. You know, I don't know if I verbalized it or just stressed over it. But, yeah, she was very pleased with the fact that she had blonde leg hair.
So did she wear shorts to meet your family
in the winter?
Yeah, it was, you know, yeah, absolutely. Big family reunion.
Okay.
But it's not appetizing if you're in a restaurant.
Yeah, you know, you're more, it's funny because she was fine about it. You felt like it was a reflection on you, kind of. Which is how I felt.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was, yeah. And, you know, we were in a social setting, so it was embarrassing to me.
Huh.
Right.
Well,
I think back now, small stuff.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Thank you, Rhonda. What you?
I think my parents were embarrassed about me when I was in, you know, full acne, braces, and glasses mode. I think, you know, they didn't want me to be that way.
Well, there's that period of time where you, and my father always used to say, you should put teenagers up in the attic when they turn 11 and let them come out when they're 18.
Oh, that my father said the same thing, except I was going to go on the ground and he'd feed me through a straw.
Oh,
and you two found each other.
This explains a lot. Kathy and Judy back. You know our number. It's 312-981-7200. You can call us. You can text us. And we're just talking about moments when you're just socially really uncomfortable. And this is Teresa. Hi, Teresa.
Hi.
Hi. How can you relate to this?
Well, I carry my weight in my stomach. And unfortunately, I am quite frequently asked if I'm pregnant. And I'm not.
Wow.
Now,
so what do people say?
Are you just being tearful now? Because it hurts your feelings?
I kind of put up a wall, and I've noticed I have avoided some social situations. Usually if it's one-on-one, I can, you know, I usually try to make the other person feel better, which I don't know why I do that. But I just say, oh, it's okay. I'm just fat. I carry my weight in my stomach. But, like, when I go to, like, a baby shower, those are the worst.
Oh, gosh. And people say things like, oh, so when are you due?
Right. Or I have my kids with me, and they'll say, oh, you know, you have, you know, these three, and then you're due with another one. And, you know, and then my children hear it, which is just humiliating.
Awkward. Yeah. Awkward.
I don't know why people do that. But if there's any callers that are listening, just unless someone says, I am pregnant.
Yeah, or unless it's somebody that you know.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Exactly. Good point. Thank you, Teresa.
Sure. Thanks.
Okay.
Right,
our number is 312-981-7200. This is Ron. Hey, Ron, when were you socially really uncomfortable?
Well, this was years ago. I was waiting at a bus stop late at night trying to get home from work, just wiped out. And I had my Walkman on, just me and another guy at the bus stop. And I realized after about 5 minutes that this guy is talking to me. So I have to kind of turn it down and pretend I'd been listening to him so I didn't seem rude.
Was he kind of crazy? And,
well, after I turned my Walkman down, I realized that he wasn't actually talking to me at all.
He was just talking.
He was repeating the same thing over and over about how he had to get up at 4 o'clock and and take care of the chickens, because if he didn't do it, nobody was going to do it. And and he just talked in circles, and I thought, great, I'm trapped at a bus stop with this guy.
Ooh, and I think, oh, that poor guy, he's trapped with that brain for the rest of his life, you know, with those voices in his head. But yeah, I'll bet that made you feel very
uncomfortable. I'm the root guy, not paying attention to somebody who's talking to me. Like,
There you go. Thank you, Ron. 312-981-7200 is our number. What was the moment you can recall when you thought, oh, I'm so uncomfortable? This is Helen. Hi, Helen.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
I was asked to officiate at my ex-husband's fourth wedding.
Who asked
you? And furthermore, to stand in the receiving line on one side of him while his new bride stood on the other side.
Which wife were you?
Pardon me?
Which wife were you? Were you his first wife?
Yes, I was wife number one, and she was wife number four.
And you are a minister of marriage?
I'm a Methodist minister, yes.
Okay, now wait, was he the one that asked you?
Yes.
No wonder you divorced him.
I mean, really? What did you say?
What did I say?
Yes.
I said, well, I asked him where the wedding was supposed to be, and it was going to be in a watering hole, and I said, well, I really can't do that there. And he said, well, you'll come to the wedding, and of course I knew the woman, and I said, yeah, I'll come. And when I got there then, he insisted that I stand up with he and she. And as people would come through the line, he would say, this is my first wife and this is my new wife.
What? Now, had you been close friends with him for a while?
We, you know, we share children and we share grandchildren. So I wouldn't say we were buddies, but we were friendly.
You ever expressed a desire to retire to Utah?
Oh. Helen,
well, he should.
Helen, do you have a hard time saying no?
I guess I do, yeah.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I think there are some people that would go, you got to be kidding. And other people. Go ahead.
I laughed.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that counts for something. So are they still married?
No, she passed away. She was a lovely woman, though, and I really
He's
liked
not that good of bed, is he?
Not in bed. At
He's not a sounded, good bet.
I know, but it sounded, I don't know for our listeners.
Like, I was a bed reference.
You didn't want people to think you were the second of your wife.
It's just like autocorrect. It's just what we expected from Kathy. So.
You know, okay.
Helen, thank you. What?
Never mind. It's about autocorrect, and there's too many people on the line.
Okay, this is Lisa. Lisa, what was your socially uncomfortable moment?
Hi. We're visiting a friend's house, my husband and I, and they were my husband's best friend growing up and his wife, who I didn't know all that well. And they had just purchased this new home, and we were so excited to see it. And we're walking through, and it was just gorgeous. And they were talking about how they needed to decorate and make it their own and some things they didn't really care for, but they were going to fix. And we're walking through, the wife and I, we get to the master bedroom, and I look on the wall, and they have this, like, royal blue wallpaper, and it has these huge white flowers the size of my head. And I said, oh, I bet you can't wait to get that off the wall. And she says, actually, I just bought that at Pottery Barn and just finished hanging it.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, it was an awkward visit we had there that day.
Third mouse disease.
Oh, Lisa. 312-981-7200. Heather, socially awkward moment.
Yeah, I was at the health club, and I was in the ladies' locker room, and a person walked in, and I thought it was a young man, and I said, oh, you know, this is the women's locker room, and the other person said, yeah, I know, because it was a young woman, but I thought it was a young man. It was horrible.
Oh, she was obviously dressed.
She was.
Or you would not have made the mistake.
Dressed, and she looked very much, and tried to look very much like a man. This was obviously a woman that was her, you know,
that's
the way
how she liked to look.
Exactly. And it was incredibly awkward. I felt horrible, and I ran into the gym, and then I basically ran home.
Oops. All right.
So you got a good workout out of it.
There you go. That's what the gym is for. Thank you, Heather. And finally, this is Diane. Diane, socially awkward.
Yes, I'm an elementary school teacher, so and it was just conferences. I have a million of them, but this one was actually at a teacher's conference, like at a big banquet, and I was a little late, like 3 minutes. The person had already started the presentation, and there was a seat in the middle, and so they said, okay, go sit in the middle. So I had my laptop with me and these bags, and I'm trying to sneak in real quiet while the woman's talking, and I swing my laptop bag over, knock over a pitcher of ice water completely on the woman seated right behind me, who was probably the oldest teacher in the room, and she was not very forgiving, and she complained about it the entire day, that she was cold, she was damp.
Oh, man.
The whole day, I had to listen to it, and we went to lunch, and I seriously considered not going back, because it was so embarrassing.
I'll
for
bet.
The whole day, and I finally just wanted to say, okay, I'm
sorry already.
Like, I cleaned it up. I said, I'm like, you're not very understanding.
Here's my coat.
Teacher.
Yeah. Diane, thank you.
Horrible.
Bye-bye. Sometimes I say, when Kristen plays the music, and I just want to sit and listen to the music. That's how lazy I got.
Wait,
I don't want to open my mouth.
What is this?
I don't know.
Blues Traveler.
Oh, okay. We should know it. You know what it sounded like at the beginning with the guitar was if I had a hammer. That's what I was waiting for that to...
Did you hear any
yes,
of that
I'm
Peter?
69.
Did you hear any of the Peter and Paul?
And Mary?
No, Mary's died.
Okay.
Did you hear any of their talking about going on? And, you know, they always invoke her. And then they, I think they were asked, what's your, you know, what song do you think defines you? And what song would you think it was?
If I Had a Hammer.
Yeah.
Or Leaving on a Jet Plane.
Yeah, no, that it was If I Had a
Hammer.
Yeah.
I think that was one of their first ones.
Probably.
Yeah.
I don't know. So there Tom is going out of town for a couple of days in 2 weeks. And I always think, oh, I don't have to cook. And I just wondered when
it sounds
you live
so
alone,
traditional. Yes.
No, but when you live alone, or if your spouse or your partner or husband goes out of town, will you make yourself a meal that has like... So what do you eat for... What do people... I mean, I have a friend, Phyllis, who is a widow now, and she'll still get herself a piece of fish and make a sweet potato and then put parsley on her fish...
Bagel, and avocado, red onion.
Frozen Benihana.
Yeah. Frozen Benihana.
Scrambled eggs and toast.
My go-to is Trader Joe's eggplant parmesan. You can eat the whole little container, and it's only 750 calories.
But, you know, I was thinking of this recently because I used to like that. If everyone was gone, I'd make, you know, get a... Sharon didn't like tuna that much, tuna steak, so I'd grill tuna and get some wasabi paste. And
you would?
Yeah,
wow.
I would. But now
but
I don't.
You had two kids at home.
Right, so if they were all gone, I was by myself.
So what do you do now?
Pita chips.
Okay. and my new thing
is
butternut
bad.
Squash
right.
soup. I've been making butternut squash
soup. Oh, that's so good again.
And so I have a big bowl of butternut squash soup and crackers and cheese. Dinner, done.
Yeah, okay. But it's not done. That's the thing. It's not.
What do you mean it's
Why,
not
you
done?
Go
it's
nashing?
Veggies, cheese, and bread. Yeah. Veggies, cheese, and gluten-free crackers.
Okay.
Well, I want to know people's go-to meals when... If they're living on their own, or if you are left alone because somebody's on a fishing trip or the wife is out, you know, on a business trip. Because so far the person who's cooked the most is our man, Steve.
Yeah, but I've given it up. I mean, that's my...
Pita chips now.
Right. I was really just thinking... Last night, in fact,
I
had...
Do anything with the pita chips? Do you make yourself a little...
Dip,
guacamole dip.
Stick of butter.
Okay. There.
Are you kidding?
Have you ever dipped a pita chip in a stick of butter? It's very good.
Well, we have that soft fake butter.
Mm.
I wouldn't think of doing that.
You could scrape it. You could just scrape it across the top. Yum.
Oh, well, let's talk to Kathy and see what her go-to meal is when she's on her own. Hey, Kath.
Hi.
Hi.
I buy myself some Brussels sprouts. My husband cannot stand them, and I really love them. And I have a little pan that I do a whole, like maybe half a stick of butter, and that I pour over it. Uh-huh. Or I fry bacon and put that over it with pistachio nuts. And
That's my thing. But the funny thing was, one day my sister, who lives in Florida, called me, and she, you know, we're talking. She goes, "What are you having for dinner?" And I go, "I'm having Brussels sprouts." And she goes, "Me too." And she goes, "My husband's out of town." And this is what I did when my husband would be out of town or go somewhere. And I, all those years, I never knew that she did the same thing.
That's
and my,
weird.
Genetic. My mother didn't really serve Brussels sprouts.
I have never in my entire life cooked Brussels sprouts. Ever.
Oh, they're,
now, oh, they're the Kathy, new kale. You got to go for
are
it.
They?
Yeah, they are.
And, you know, Kath, here's my recipe for Brussels sprouts. In the oven for 45 minutes, you roll them in olive oil and then put kosher salt on them.
Oh.
They're just like chips.
Or shave them. You mean you shave them?
I'll have to try that next time.
Shave them? No, I don't shave them.
Except now my husband's retired, so he doesn't really go out of town. So I order them whenever I see them when we go out because, you know, when I'm at home, you know, I make something for both of us.
When I was at Judy's house last weekend, on the counter was this, I thought, what is that on the counter? It's this giant stalk of Brussels sprouts. I never knew what they looked like when they weren't off the stalk.
I have a buddy who grows them. They're really cool looking.
Hmm.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Kat.
Well, I'll try my recipe.
I'm also
too,
really glad to hear you, girls. I don't always get to listen, but I used to call you years and years and years ago.
Did we solve any
you
of your life problems?
Started. You sound exactly the same.
Oh.
Exactly the same.
Okay.
It's so comforting.
Don't come too close.
Thank you, Kathy.
But the reason I used to listen to all the time because I had just quit work and I was, you know, home alone with my new baby,
and
to hear adults and be able to talk to them and call in all the time and stuff. And now
your baby is in college.
He's 29.
Okay.
Yes,
I hope he's not
he's
in
now
college.
A professor. He's now a professor.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's great to hear. And don't forget, next week we're going to be going on the stream after 10:30, so you've got to listen to us either on your computer or on your smartphone.
Now, are you able to take calls when you're on the stream, Kathy?
Yes, we are, Steve.
Are you?
Yes, we are. Absolutely.
Yes.
Thank you, Kathy.
312-981-7200. And this is what Rhonda is her go-to meal.
Rhonda? Hey, Rhonda, when you're home alone, what's your go-to dinner?
Fettuccine Alfredo or beef stroganoff.
Sour cream or cream.
He doesn't like the white cream sauces in anything, and so I just get so excited.
Don't you have to go on a trip or something? I'm getting a Jones for cream sauce.
You know what I was thinking, though, when we were just talking before and also with you, what if you proposed when he's around, let's have our favorite things dinner. You make your favorite thing and I'll make mine. Unless he says, you know, your fettuccine arrabbiata or something like that. Would he have a favorite thing that you don't want to serve to him?
Anything with pumpkin. The whole idea of pumpkin pie kind of grosses me out.
We can't have that for dinner.
But he likes it.
Maybe chicken livers, but that takes a long time to prepare.
I've fixed that for a long time.
I don't know.
It'd just be fun.
A lot of times we'll cook, you know, on our own too, but I just don't think of it. You know, it's one of those things that comes up. Oh, you know what? I feel like I'm just going to have this tonight. Oh, okay. Well, then I'll have that. But it's not in the house. You know, I don't keep the whipping cream in the house because, you know, it goes bad quickly. And
you just had all that those calories from fettuccine Alfredo.
Yeah. Yum.
Yeah. Gosh, could you imagine having it regularly?
Anything with cream sauce for Rhonda. All right.
Okay.
Thank you, Rhonda. Our number is 312-981-7200, and we'll be back right after this.
Kathy and Judy, talking to you.
If I had a hammer, I'd a hammer.
What's the matter?
I forgot to have a hammer.
Oh, this is Peter, Paul, and Mary. We were referring earlier to the song that most people identify them with.
You do. And I.
And
if
then
I had a hammer, and then what's the other one?
Puff the Magic Dragon.
There you go. Leaving on a jet plane.
Okay, we're talking to you guys about what's your go-to meal when a person that you cook for is gone. This is Chris. Hey.
Oh, wait a minute. Sorry, Chris.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, my go-to meal stems from my childhood because it was something my mother made for me. And because I grew up as a notoriously picky eater, you can imagine her frustration. And then when she finally found something I liked, it was like, you know, bells ringing. So she would make a tuna fish sandwich with tuna salad that she wouldn't put eggs in, but she would use Miracle Whip apples and pickles in the mix.
Delicious.
Yum. Pickle relish?
No, actually, she would dice pickles.
Oh, wow.
She would dice apples. And so now that's what I make. And I've always lived with people who either cannot stand Miracle Whip. They always have to go to mayonnaise, which I personally can't stand. And they would just look at me with those, like, of a third arm going down my forehead anytime I would use it.
Is there a Mrs. Chris or a Mr. Chris?
Not anymore.
Oh. There so, used there to was. Be.
Oh, there, so this is your go-to be. Meal.
This is my go-to meal. Anytime, because every time I would make it, and then they could smell it, like, oh, my God, why are you making that? So
because it's canned tuna.
It when no one's around. It is canned tuna.
Right. Mm-hmm. Canned tuna. And, what's that? Chicken of the sea?
Actually, no, I use Starkist.
Okay. All right.
Albacore. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Albacore and, in water or oil? I always go for oil.
Oh, water. I use water.
Okay. Not as much pick flavor. And little diced apples and Miracle Whip.
Diced apple and pickles.
I might have to
and the Miracle
some of that.
Whip.
That's and, you know, really was, good.
Another thing that's was, good is grapes instead of the apples.
Mm-hmm. But what was funny, someone came home one time while I was in the process of finishing up, and they smelled it, and they said, oh, is there enough? Do you have, like, enough for another sandwich? And I was, sure, absolutely. So I made them one. They loved it. And then I was like, by the way, that's got Miracle Whip in it. And, of course, you thought they just, you know, imbibed cyanide because of the look on their face.
That it had Miracle Whip in it. Yeah.
You inspired one of us.
You have, Chris. Thank you. I switched when I got married. My husband liked Miracle Whip. And I was a male family.
I can't
family.
Taste the difference.
I can't either. It's
just, oh, come on.
I can't.
No.
Really?
Yeah. Uh-uh. What's in Miracle Whip that's not in mayonnaise? A little vinegar?
Well, let's maybe? Say what's in mayonnaise that's not in Miracle Whip. Natural products.
Mr. Mayo.
No, yeah.
Or your mayo industry, right?
I am one of those guys. No, not Miracle
okay.
Whip.
Okay. This is Mark. Hey, Mark.
Talking about sandwiches. Yes.
Your go-to meal when you don't have to cook for anybody else.
My go-to meal is to the food or meal of knowledge, and it's WGN and listening to you two lovely, beautiful young ladies.
Okay, so you're blind.
Okay.
next is, actually, I misunderstood. I didn't catch the question correctly, and so I'm going to kind of change this a little bit, if you don't mind, just for me anyhow. I don't cook, so I think it would be even better to ask people to call in that don't cook, that people that cook for them, what do they do when their cooker's not there? I peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for me because I'm too cheap, and I am a type A personality. I'm a go, 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 and I don't have time to cook, so it's peanut butter and jelly.
That's delicious.
If my family died, I would have peanut butter and jelly and every type of different type of jam and jelly in the container, and I'd have the cheapest peanut butter I could possibly
find.
Did
you say if your family died?
Well, okay, disappeared. Is that better?
It's just like, I understand how
okay.
he said it.
Okay. All right, okay. Mark.
Thank you.
This is Lee. No?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. This is Lee.
Hi, Lee.
Hi. My go-to meal when no one's home is a fried egg sandwich on an English muffin.
Uh-huh.
That's delicious.
With maybe a piece of cheese.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to tell you something. My mother, who passed away at age 88, every night, I married when she was in her 40s, so she was alone. My dad was already gone. And she made a full meal every night. There would be a protein, a vegetable, a salad.
Starch.
Every single night, it would be something, a full meal. I couldn't get over it because she never fed me like that when I was at home.
Well, true. Obviously she liked her time alone.
Obviously.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Thank you, Lee.
And this is Carol. Hey, Carol.
Hey.
Your go-to meal's kind of fancy.
It is, but I have to tell you, my husband, he only eats corn and green beans for vegetables, number one. Number two, he's very particular about the meat, it has to be very lean. So when he's out of town,
it has to be very what?
Lean, you know, you know, he won't eat anything that's not, that has any bit of fat on it. So we're used to eating fillets. But when he goes out of town, I grab out my grill pan, I buy an 8-ounce fillet, I grill it on top of the stove. I don't even use my barbecue outside because now I'm in my house. I pour myself a glass of wine. In the meantime, I throw a baked potato in the oven. I also make fresh asparagus. I bring out my steamer. I make my fresh hollandaise sauce.
Oh, my
asparagus.
God.
I make béarnaise sauce for my steak. And I also make a Caesar salad for
this
my
is a very
fa- stuff he won't eat.
Then do you make yourself a baked Alaska for dessert?
No, no. But I do make probably a piece. I take a piece of cheesecake out that I store-bought at Mariano's.
Okay.
Okay, now I say, what is the big difference between a hollandaise and a béarnaise? Why don't you just use the same sauce for, I mean, two
There is
sauces.
A different flavor. There really is a different flavor. I think.
One has tarragon. I know the béarnaise
yes.
has tarragon.
Yes.
But, oh, my gosh. Two
yeah, but
sauces?
I, you know, and then, of course, I won't even talk about my cholesterol after that weekend.
There you go.
Right.
Okay, thanks.
And I love your show, by the way.
Oh, thank you, Carol.
Thank you.
I'm from California, but I'm also in Chicago. I'm like a snowbird. And I can't wait to come back here to listen to WGN. Like, this is late for us. We're
now, Jerry, you know you can listen on your computer or on your smartphone with the WGN app. You don't have to do without your Kathy and Judy fix.
Well, there you go.
All right. Give it a shot.
All right. You guys have a great holiday. I love your guys' show, and I can't wait to hear the other listeners. So.
Now,
thank you.
If Judy wanted to practice with the smartphone or the computer, when would be a good time to do that, Kathy?
If I wanted to?
No, next week, probably. Next week when we'll be going on the stream at 10:30, a person could – actually, you can try it right now, boys and girls. Go to your computer to WGNAM, or you can go to your smartphone to the WGN app and just see that you can listen to us on those devices, and that next week when all of a sudden we're not there on GNAM after 10:30, you don't have to get your undies in a bundle.
Yeah.
It'll all be okay.
I love reading books, it's fun. I often read them with my mom. I like reading to explore.
Steve, that's your music.
There's no better
yes.
way,
does that make
sure.
you feel like you're home now?
It does, yes.
Probably didn't give it a thought when you were away.
No. Hercule Poirot. Could you ever watch?
Oh, sure, with the little mustache.
It's impossible for me to say his name. Hercule Poirot. Yes. Well, an Agatha Christie character.
Yes.
Murder on the Orient Express and all of that. And there was a great PBS run, which just ended. After years and years, the actor who played him said he was hanging up his little goofy mustache.
Yes.
But now there's a new Hercule Poirot novel out. Sophie Hanna, who's a British novelist, a lot of fun and very successful, has written a Hercule Poirot novel. It's called The Monogram Murders, and she
you
did
can
it.
Do that?
Well, the Christie estate sort of hired her to do it.
Ah.
So, which is interesting to me because, so how do you go about writing an Agatha Christie novel? She says you don't.
But I was always very clear that I wasn't going to try and write an Agatha Christie novel because you can't do that. One writer cannot write as another. If you try and imitate another writer, you will fail, especially a writer like Agatha Christie with a very distinctive writing style. So what I set out to do and what I have done is write a new Hercule Poirot novel. It isn't by Agatha Christie. I'm not the new Agatha Christie. I'm just a writer who's written a Poirot novel. And so I've deliberately sort of invented things within the book to explain the fact that the style is slightly different. So I'm writing from the point of view of a first-person narrator who isn't in any of Christie's books, and that seemed to me to be a sort of sensible and fairly authentic way.
So what we have is this police officer from Scotland Yard.
Yes, who's called Edward Catchpole, and he's the narrator. And most of Christie's Poirot novels are narrated by Arthur Hastings. And so that seemed to me to be quite sensible, because if people read The Monogram Murders and think, oh, this is sounds slightly different from a Christie novel, well, there's a sensible reason why. It's that it's a different narrator. It's a different man speaking.
He did make a passing reference, I think, to Hastings in the book.
Yes, yes. He mentions that Poirot has a friend called Hastings.
Were you tempted, or did you at all sort of twist the Poirot character to make him yours a bit?
No, I deliberately didn't.
Were you tempted?
No.
No.
God, no. No, not even slightly.
You were smarter than that.
Well, I mean, I'm a real Agatha Christie fan. I'm an obsessive Agatha Christie fan, actually, and have been since I was 12. And it would feel like blasphemy to change Agatha's character. Right. She created him exactly as she wanted him. He's absolutely brilliant as he is. He doesn't need to change. For me, the novelty and the innovation comes in with the storyline, and that's where it should come in.
So as a writer who's had great success, and then you come in with this project, the next question obviously is, will there be more? And I don't know that there's a resolution to that yet, but are you concerned at all about losing your own voice or track? I mean, if it's going well, this is a very nice book. It's doing very well. You might get sucked into it, right?
Well, firstly, there'd be nothing sort of accidental about it. If I don't know what the Agatha Christie estate are thinking at the moment. That this book has only just come out, so you know, I'm not sure anyone's got round to thinking beyond this particular book.
We're all thinking about it, Sophie.
You might be, and some people might be, but officially, right, No one said anything to me. So, from my point of view, they might want to do another one. They might not. If they did, they might want me to write it. They might want to try someone else. I mean, who knows? I've literally got no idea what's likely to happen. But if they did decide they wanted me to do another one, they would ask me. And at that point, I'd have a choice. So there's no danger of me being accidentally, you know, falling into the hazardous pit of writing more Poirot novels if I don't want to.
Here in the States, there's the commercial, I've fallen and I can't get up. That's not going to happen.
No.
And so the most unfair thing, I think, to do with an author is to bring her in on a book tour and not ask any questions about the book. So let's go to the Monogram Murders. Three people killed in a luxurious hotel off Piccadilly, right?
Yes.
All in locked rooms. Mm-hmm. Tell me about the story.
Well, it actually starts when Poirot is in a coffee house in London and a very distressed woman rushes in off the street, and Poirot tries to help her because she's clearly terrified. She tells him that someone is after her, and if they catch her, they will kill her. And just as he says, oh, well, you know, let me help you, she insists that he mustn't help her because it's entirely appropriate that she should be murdered. And she begs him, in the event of her getting murdered, that he must not solve the crime. She says, you know, please, if I'm murdered, make sure my killer isn't caught because justice will finally have been done when I'm dead. And Poirot has no idea what she's talking about. Before he can find out any more, she rushes out again into the night, and he can't catch up with her. So that's the first chapter. And then the second chapter, you meet Catchpole, and you find out that he, in his capacity as Scotland Yard detective, is investigating the murders of three guests at a nearby posh hotel, the Bloxham Hotel, each of whom has been found in their locked hotel room, and each of whom has a cufflink in his or her mouth with the initials P.I.J., on each of these three cufflinks. And Poirot connects these three murders in his mind with the distressed woman who ran out of the coffee shop because of one remark that she made to him makes him think this has got something to do with those murders in the hotel.
And of course it does. That's Sophie Hanna. The name of her book is The Monogram Murders. You can hear the full interview at WGNradio.com and on my Facebook page at Steve Bertrand on Books or on Twitter at Steve Bertrand.
Do you find yourself talking like that for a bit after you've had an interview like that?
It's so hard for me to hear her because she's got a little Poirot. I cannot say it.
Poirot. Whatever.
Right.
Whatever. Steve, do you have...
I will not tell you my names.
See, I've been cleaning out my computer because there's so much crap on it. And one of the things that I found was a piece from back in 2011, but it's called The Dirty Words We Dare Not Say. And it's just about how families tend, it by family, to avoid certain words and to have that be part of the understanding within the family.
About your body.
Yeah, about your body and what you say and what you don't say. And the writer, Johanna Goman, wrote a really interesting piece, but one of them was about the fact that in their family, it was just understood. You didn't say this, you didn't say this, you said this instead. And she said, one of my brothers once broke off a 2-year relationship with a girlfriend who dared to defy our word fascism. After she suffered a minor accidental flatulence incident, my brother stared at her in horror as though she'd just pulled the family dog's bloody head out of her purse. To make matters worse, she chose not to slide under the table and cower in shame, as one would expect, but instead she rolled her eyes at his disgust and shouted, "Oh, it's only a fart. Get over it." At that, the death knell sounded, and she never graced our door again. So the question is there an understanding, or has there been an understanding in your family that you certainly just will not use certain words, like the words that belong to the part or the function? Mary.
Hello.
What was the situation in your family?
Well, I don't know if it was understanding. We just never said the real names of genital areas. And I was born in 46, so it was a long time ago before it was the thing to teach your children the real name.
Right.
So I was the second oldest, and my brothers, we called their penis a go-go because that's how they go to the bathroom.
Oh, so is that what you were told it was, or did you just...
I don't remember
that. I'm sure
that,
your parents...
Right. It's funny. Right. I was a teenager, I think, before I found out the real name of it. And how I found out was I read a joke where the babysitter was ignorant like me, and she was sitting with a child whose parents were more progressive and told the child the real name of the organ, and he said penis. And she said, "No, that's somebody who plays the piano."
Well, what did they call? What did they call in your family? What did they call a vagina?
Nothing. We never called it anything.
Not a down there, because down there was pretty common usage.
No.
Okay. And Mary, your own, did you have children?
Yes.
And how did you handle it with your children?
God, I don't.
I guess I think by that time, I was kind of involved with organizations or groups that were more progressive. I probably did tell her the real name, but
I remember.
I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Mary. I remember that my little brother and sister thought the real names were so funny that they used to call them Peanuts and Virginia. Our number is 312-981-7200. Give us a call about the names that your family never used, but what the substitutes were. Kathy and Judy back. One of the things I found on my computer when I was cleaning it out was a piece from 2011 about the dirty words we dare not say. Very funny piece about how families come to a new understanding of language when it comes to body parts and body functions. So we're just asking you about how your family handled it. And this is Joanna. Hi.
Hey, Kathy and Judy, I love you so much.
Thank you.
You know, I can't believe this is the second time I'm calling in. I talked to you, I think, when I was 5 about Jimmy Carter.
Oh, my God. And now you're 53, right?
Something like that.
So how did your family handle certain words or not handle them?
You know, it was actually my ex-husband, and one day I had gas, and he goes, no, it's rose poofs.
What's rose poofs?
Gas.
Yeah. Oh, flatulence.
Flatulence, yep.
Rose poofs.
Wow.
All right, it's okay if you've divorced him.
Really. That is hyper-euphemistic.
Yeah, it certainly is.
Thank you.
Joanna, thanks for the call. And this is Nancy. Hey, Nancy.
Hi. I'm the oldest of 8 girls, and my mom referred to our vaginas as our foo-foo.
As your foo-foo?
Yes. So imagine my shock when little bunny foo-foo came out, or people said, it just has a little foo-foo on it.
Oh.
You know, Jesus Christ. You know.
Oops.
And you know what? She's 87, and she still calls it a foo-foo.
Foo-foo. How does that go over in the nursing home?
No, are you kidding me? She's like your mom was, Kathy. We have to keep an ankle bracelet on her to make sure we know where she is. She's all over the place.
A GPS. That's hilarious. Thank you, Nancy. This is Lynn.
Hi.
How did your family handle certain words?
Well, this is a story about my nephews. I have triplet nephews, and they were visiting us for Easter. And we live in Northwest Indiana, so we have the day after Easter is Dingus Day. And their family taught the boys that their penises were called dinguses. And so our pastor was preaching that day about being responsible and knowing that we would all be responsible for Dingus Day on Dingus Day. And the boys started nudging and laughing and because they could not believe there was a day for dinguses. They're
what?
Like,
What is Dingus Day?
Oh, I think it's like a Polish holiday here, and actually people go around to bars, and they drink and eat, and they gather pins to put all over their shirts that they've gone here and there and there and there.
Oh, that's hilarious.
We have a Boston town that takes people around for Dingus Day. I do not participate. Well, but
there used to be a line of costume wear, small doll-sized costume wear called Dingus Wear. And several years ago, I met the man who invented that, and I was so excited you would have thought I'd met Brad Pitt. Just little cowboy outfits and black tie.
Pin?
No, something that would slip on a dingus to make it a little bit more festive or dressed up.
Well, now my nephews would have thought a little bit different about if you're slipping something on the dingus.
There you go. Well, I think you can Google it and see dingus wear that there actually used to be a line of stuff. Very funny. Thank you, Lynn.
Oh,
dingus,
you're welcome.
Dingus Day. Never heard of that. Oops, not meant this one. April.
Hi.
April, hi.
Our friends have an 8-year-old who just now is learning different names for it from his friends. And he went past Dick's Sporting Goods, and his friend giggled and he asked him why, and he told him what Dick meant. And from here on out, this 8-year-old refers to his package as
Sporting Goods.
Which I think is actually hilarious.
Cute. Johnny just threw a ball at my Sporting Goods, right?
Yes.
Ow.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you, April.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
And this is Mary Ellen. Hi, Mary Ellen.
Hey, hello.
Hello.
You know, when I was growing up, oh, my God, my family never used the word fart. Mm-hmm. And, in fact, I have trouble saying it even today. So when I was growing, when I had kids and we had to use that word, I would use beezer because that's what my parents always called it.
You know, if you passed gas, they would say you made a beezer.
You made a beezer, right. Yeah, so that's what I grew up with.
How about other body parts? How about genitals?
Oh, it was number one and number two. You never said pee or poop.
Okay, so that was the function. But how about the part?
It was down there. It was just they never mentioned anything like that. But anyway, when my son, my poor son, ended up going to junior high on a school bus, and he actually said, "Who just made a beezer?" And everybody looked at him, and he felt so embarrassed, and he couldn't even figure out what the hell the problem was. You know, he just used the word beezer, and to this day, I still use it, and my kids still get very angry.
And that is, I have always contended, the most useless question in the world.
What? Who made it?
Yeah, right. Who cut the cheese? Who fart? You know, what?
Yeah,
somebody wants
what?
To admit it, right?
No. And I so admire people that can do that without any guilt.
You mean just rip one off?
Yeah, just rip one, because I would die. I mean, I would just crawl into a hole if that happened to me. So
you know, that's considered a kind of a demarcation in relationships, the first time that you can fart in front of the person that you're dating.
Oh, I was
friends.
Married 30 years, and I never did it in front of my husband, unless it was an accident. I mean, I would never.
Really? How does one control that?
Well, you just go to a different
room. You're not always the boss of your beezer,
you know. That's right.
Hey, you have cheeks and you have muscles. You can hold that beezer in until
it's... Wow, that's a heck of a sphincter. Okay, Mary Ellen.